Okay. I was moved to pull this book off my shelf this morning and to start reading it, and I did, and I was told that it was not just for me, that it was for all of us. It's called The Garden of the Prophet by Khalil Gibran, and it's sort of a companion volume to The Prophet. Didn't get as much airplay and probably isn't in every hippie's library, okay, like The Prophet is.
Oh gee, I have one of those in my basement.
Yes. it just resonated with me, and I'm not going to try to explain what it means. I'm just going to share it with you. If you remember the way the prophet is laid out is people ask him questions and he answers them. And this is quite similar. And one spoke and said, "Master, life has dealt bitterly with our hopes and desires. Our hearts are troubled and we do not understand. I pray you comfort us and open us to the meanings of our sorrows." And his heart was moved with compassion, and he said, "Life is older than all things living. Even as beauty was winged ere the beautiful was born on earth, and even as truth was truth ere it was uttered. Life sings in our silences and dreams in our slumber. Even when we are beaten and low, life is enthroned and high. And when we weep, life smiles upon the day and is free even when we drag our chains. Oftentimes we call life bitter names, but only when we ourselves are bitter and dark." That one really jumped out at me. "And we deem her empty and unprofitable, but only when the soul goes wandering in desolate places and the heart is drunken with over-mindfulness of the self. Life is deep and high and distant, and though only your vast vision can reach even her feet, yet she is near. And though only the breath of your breath reaches her heart, the shadow of your shadow crosses her face, and the echo of your faintest cry becomes a spring and an autumn in her breast. And life is veiled and hidden, even as your greater self is hidden and veiled. Yet when life speaks, all the winds become words, and when she speaks again, the smiles upon your lips and the tears in your eyes also turn into words. When she sings, the deaf hear and are held, and when she comes walking, the sightless behold her and are amazed and follow her in wonder and astonishment." And he ceased from speaking, and a vast silence enfolded the people. And in the silence there was an unheard song, and they were comforted of their loneliness and their aching. Now, how did the Spirit know I needed that? You might ask. How did the Spirit know you might have needed that? You might ask. And then my question to myself and to you is, when was the last time we listened? Is there anything we need to, or you would like to finish up on or carry through with of what we might have worked with or come upon last week? We didn't do a whole lot of the book. In fact, we didn't do any of the literal part of the book. We were doing some other things about life events. So I wanted to make sure there were no... we didn't have a whole lot of threads left over. I guess the biggest thing that I respond to, and you can certainly check this out in the recording as well as the blog that got published last week, is that, you know, we call unity practical spirituality. And I would certainly call this practical spirituality as well. And so if we can't make it practical, it's nice, but it's rather meaningless. It's kind of a nice, you know, 40 minutes out of our week. It doesn't really do a whole lot except, you know, give me a little bit of what I might be looking for 40 minutes. I missed a couple of things last week that I just wanted to fill people in on, and I'm not going to do this in context. You can put this in any context you want to. One is that, and it strikes me as being rather strange that I forget this so often. God is my source. Not Hillary or Bernie or Donald. Right? God is my source. So where am I getting my information, and where am I getting my grace from? And I have to stop and ask myself that sometimes, because I get, I don't know about you, but I kind of lose track of that one. And I think someone or something else is my source other than what is really my source. And the other thing is, since we talk about this a whole lot in here, is about vibration and frequency. And the vibration and frequency of anger and fear, which we're not going to say is unreal, is real because we all experience it in some ways or another, right? But we don't get rid of that or change that at all by holding on to anger and fear. Now, the ego mind and the thinking mind say, well, you really need to be outraged, you really need to be afraid, you really need to be fearful, because if you're not, then, you know, something's going to really bite you on the behind, and you're going to get caught with your drawers down.
Okay.
And most of us have learned that in childhood.
Okay.
And we sort of carry that same message with us into adult life. And in our adult spirituality, we are being asked and challenged sometimes to believe there is more to life than just that. And that there is a difference between fear and discernment. Discernment says, you know, don't walk in front of traffic when the light's red. Right? That just makes sense. Put your seatbelt on, not because you're afraid of getting hurt, right? But put your seatbelt on because it's a practical, wise thing to do. Is there a difference between being wise and being afraid? Okay. And sometimes I have to ask myself that more often than once. So we're going to begin on page 219. I just want to make sure I've got the temperature set okay. But I know, first of all, we generate a lot of energy in here, and I know in the wintertime when the heat's on, this is very close to the boiler. So the only thing we can do in here is regulate the air conditioning, which I turned on, okay? So if it gets too cold, let me know, right? Which I doubt. I'm going to start around the middle of the page, if that's okay. Let me start. I just noticed this on the first paragraph, first full paragraph on 219. When we look at the fears for what they are, you can release them. We were talking about this a little bit earlier. I was talking to Jill about this, that you can't release something unless you know it's there. You can't heal something unless it's part of your awareness. And so one of the things we were talking about, and we talked about this a little bit last week, and I talked about this to some other classes that I was doing as well, is that, you know, the fear and the prejudice and the outrage and some other things that are going on didn't get created in the last 6 months. They were there, and they have been there for a long time. They've been exposed recently. And in some ways, that's a good thing. Because unless they get exposed to our awareness, there's no way in the world we're going to be able to heal them. Now, we could get into playing, "Ain't it awful?" Well, look at what's happening. Or saying, okay, right now I can see what is happening, but I also have the ability to change that. I can see my brothers and sisters reacting out of fear, which is what it is. And I certainly do not condone that or condone the actions that might come from that. But I can see them as fearful, or I can perceive them deeper than their fearfulness. Is Donald Trump a divine being? Of course he is. Is his personality? No. Neither is Hillary's. Neither is mine. Neither is yours. What is it that I choose to see? Do I choose to see the divine being behind the fear? And what would happen if I really did that? Do you think some of the people who lit up their lights for Thomas Merton on the corner of 4th and Walnut were fearful people? I'm sure they were. I'm sure some of them were. Did he see that? They were all beings of light. "I wonder what it would be like," he said, "if we were to see one another that way all the time. The only problem," he said, "would be we would be falling down worshiping one another." Can you imagine? But believe me, the fear you have had has investment in sticking around. And you may be instructed by them at any time to put the book away, forget it ever worked, forget that you saw that aura or had that experience. Forget it all, because it cannot be so. You got duped. You got fooled. That was just a little spiritual high that somehow or another snuck in there. It's not real. This is real. If it sucks, it's real. And that it cannot be so is the ego's resistance to taking you to the next step in conscious belief of your own self-worth. It cannot be so is another way of saying, I don't deserve it. Was that spiritual jolt I had real? Well, it wasn't, because I don't really deserve that. I'm not really in that high plane of consciousness. That was sort of a mistake the universe made. They gave me that awareness, but it really didn't belong to them. They should have given that to Mother Teresa. It really wasn't mine. So now I'll get back to really the real world. The higher you rise in frequency, the stronger your energy field becomes, and the less ability lower frequency has to hold you. The hooks aren't there. I mean, that's what Buddha was talking about the whole time, about non-attachment. No hooks. Or as someone has described Buddhism, no self, no problem. Okay? If I'm not holding on to anything, including my definition of who I think I am, I don't have any problems, right? Because there's nothing for me to hold on to, but if there's nothing for me to hold on to, there's nothing holding on to me. What a trip. What are you holding on to that's holding you back? Great book. I just wrote that for myself. Everybody else kind of joined in, you know. And those things that have tethered you to low frequency are the things that are being addressed so far in this text, one at a time, so that you can begin to lose them. As one of my teachers likes to say, when it's up, it's on its way out. And much like a balloon, yes, you begin to rise as the sandbags are dropped. But sometime you will be told, hey, wait a minute, everybody, there's no balloon. There's nothing happening. And by the way, if you let go of me, you will not be safe, and you might even fly away. Oh my God, what would I do if I wasn't grounded? What would I do if I didn't have this, if I didn't have that? I remember somebody, a friend of mine, a brother, who I was living with a number of years ago. I was having I'd just been sober for a couple of years. And so I was learning a lot about myself, things that I could have learned a long time ago but didn't, or couldn't, probably couldn't, right? And I was struggling with some things. I was struggling with my identity. I didn't realize it in the language of this book. I was holding on to who I thought I was, with the idea in mind that if I ever let go of that, then, you know, I would just disappear. Which sometimes I think wouldn't be a bad thing. But I was struggling with that, and he said, he was a counselor. I think he had a degree in psychology, but he had much more internal wisdom. Didn't need a degree, really. And he said, okay, I want you to, he gave me 10 index cards, and he said, I want you to take each one of those cards, and I want you to write down on each one of those cards separately a part or a piece of your identity that you feel very, very attached to or attracted to. And so I can't remember, you know, I said, I'm a man, I'm a brother, I'm a student, I'm a philosopher, I'm this, whatever the I ams were. And I had a whole bunch of them, and I wrote them all down. And the last one, which I really thought my life depended upon, was I am an alcoholic, which was, the admission to that was a big part of my own personal recovery. So obviously that was a really important thing for me to be able to identify with. And he said, okay, I want you to lie down on the floor, just relax. And he did a little relaxation exercise for me. He took the 10 index cards, and we put them kind of in order of importance. The least important was on top, and the most important was the one on the bottom. And he had me close my eyes, and he said, all right, now I'm going to read you the first card. He read the first card to me, and he said, now I want you to take a deep breath, and I want you to imagine what it would be like. Didn't even force me. Imagine what it would be like to let go of that. And he did that through all of the cards till they got to the last one. He said, now take a breath, and I'd like you to imagine what it would be like to let go of that one. I said, I can't. He said, look, you're perfectly safe. There's not a bottle next to you right now. Okay. You can pick any of these back up again when you want to. Right. You're not losing anything. This is just an experiment in release and letting go. So take a deep breath if you want to. Didn't force me. Take a deep breath and let go of this. So I did. And I just sort of remember just sort of floating free for a while. And then he said, all right, I'm going to give these back to you. And you can take on any ones you want to again, the ones you find necessary to function in the world. And so he read each one again in ascending order, read each one to me and said, you know, you can take any one of these on you'd like to. And I started to, so, 'cause some of them were still important to me. But it was really interesting. I felt like I was putting armor on. Okay? I was kind of putting these steel plates back on myself as a form of protection. And I realized at that moment, even though this book has really given me the words for that, I realized at that moment that those pieces and parts or that those identities that I was connected with were not truly essential to my being. They were primarily protective devices that I had and was using, maybe for good purpose, right? That were ways that I felt I needed to anchor myself or to be who I was or to relate to anybody else. And so it's kind of interesting to just live without those for a while, to see what that's like. So understand, everybody, when you encounter resistance through this work, it is actually a blessing and a real indication that you have moving forward. Obstacles come up when it is time to overcome them, and fear will have its way when fear is about to be released. Isn't that great to know? Oh. Doesn't feel that way. Okay. Jill?
I don't know if I understand the last part. Fear will have its way when fear is about to be released.
Fear will become much more obvious to us, okay, and will probably be exerting itself seemingly in the most strongest way.
Okay.
Kind of like a fever that's getting ready to break.
Mm-hmm.
It's at its highest point. Or a zit that's getting ready to pop, okay? It's at its sorest place. Or anything else you can think of that fits into that. A flower that's getting ready to blossom. Right? It's kind of at this tight, tight fist. And a chicken coming out of an egg, right? At that particular point, there is the most resistance because I'm pushing against it. And so it really feels like this is at its peak. Like Popeye would say, I can't stands no more. Right? It's at its peak, right? But also, when we begin to realize that, something is getting ready to be born. Something is getting ready to emerge. And my prayer sometimes, God, I hope this is it, because I don't know whether I can stands no more. I hope this is getting ready to break through, because this is getting really a little bit tough right now. And of course, then I am being called upon to surrender again. And it's that place we talked about a couple of weeks ago, being on the edge of surrender and creative manifestation. Right? That I'm in the energy of both of those things at the same time. I am surrendering to the divine will, and I am also connected to that creative energy that is manifesting, let's say, peacefulness or creation or whatever you want to call it. I'm right on the edge of both of those things. Neither one is being excluded. So we will go back now to you as the well. Remember that image. The well being fed by the source. What does your experience look like when you are in divine love and when you are becoming divine love? Well, the first thing we want to say is, when you are love, you are yourself as love and operating in frequency. It does not look like you become somebody else. You become truly you in frequency. And then what you call to you will be in that frequency in resonance, and your experiences radically, radically change. But as you vibrate as this frequency, your abilities are aligning themselves in new ways as well. And how you will use your gifts in consciousness may be altered in order to reflect the new level you are living at. So here we are encouraged to let go of form. Form is the shape we take as let's say as physical beings, but form is also, you know, the kind of the structure of our lives, the way it looks, the way my living place looks, or the way my workplace looks, or the way my hair looks, or the way my life looks. That's the form it is taking, and it's so easy to become attached to that. To become attached to that form and think that is it, because form, to our physical and material nature, gives us comfort. It's predictable. Okay? I like this. Here, you know, again, it's another anchor. It's another way of defining who we are. I live in this place, or I work in this job, or I have this kind of car, or I like this kind of music. All right? But don't be surprised as you become involved in this work that the forms of things, including maybe even our physical bodies, right, that we have grown to be attached to, we might be challenged to let go of. Right? Not so they disappear, but so we are open to more and more possibilities. How can I be open to possibilities of transformation if I'm holding on to the form of my physical self or my physical world the way I think it should be or the way I think it ought to be? That most of the I can'ts or I shouldn'ts or I cannot do are part of that. I can't do that. Our friend and teacher, Kathy Mae Miller, who talks to angels. A couple of years ago, I was talking to her, Margo and I were talking to her about these 200 girls, women, who were kidnapped by Boko Haram and taken captive. And she was not familiar with the story, and I told her about it. And she looked at me and she said, "You need to write a song about that." And of course, in my mind, I said, "What the hell are you talking about? I can't write songs." I had two abortive attempts at writing music about 40 years ago, right? And never even thought about it since. And here's this woman out of the blue, who I hardly know, who's telling me I should write a song about something. Well, I can't do that. She was forcing me to let go of that old form. The I can't, or I shouldn't, or whatever, and whenever we feel or experience something like that, that's what we're being asked to do. Don't be surprised if the form of some things changes. I gave up my, Margo and I gave up our practice, our office, a couple of years ago. I was doing counseling work there, Margo was doing massage work. And I gave up the form of my labor because it was like a coat that didn't fit anymore. I was still very good at it. I still could be good at it, but just didn't fit. And I had no idea whether anything else was going to show up to take its place. Right? And all of a sudden I get invited to do a Sunday school class, which is now my my ministry, which was, you know, totally beyond my awareness or whatever. So fortunately, I was open to allowing that form to change. I didn't know what it was going to change into, but it did. Imagine always that you had a voice that could sing 10 octaves, but that you thought you could maybe sing a few notes, or maybe just one octave. And if you look at the music that you would sing, it would be at a very, very limited level. But if you can understand now that your voice can soar to the angels, the level of music you will be given to sing will be much, much wider in its range and in its scope. And with so many more notes available to you to play and to sing, what kind of wonderful music can come from you? That is what we are saying will be changing.
How many songs do you think you've written since that time?
Probably about 25 or 30.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually got to do one of them here in church a couple of weeks ago. I'm reminded of one of Margot's favorite quotes from Peace Pilgrim here, when she said, when you live up to the light you already have, or you already are aware of or realize within your being, more will be given to you. Now what the mind wants to do is say, well, I've got this amount of light, I want some more. No, what I've got to do is really honor and live up to what is already here, what is already present within me, and then more will be given. You know, it's like that wonderful parable, which I always puzzled me an awful lot about, the talents, where Jesus describes that one guy is given one talent, another one is given five, another one is given 10. And the guy who's given one, who I always identified with, right, said, oh God, I better not lose this thing, so I think I'll bury it in the ground, right, because the master might come back and want it, right? And the guy who had five said, I'm going to invest these five. And he got five more, and the guy who had 10 said, I'm going to invest these 10, and he got 10 more. And the master came back, and here's Jerry with his little coin in the ground, okay? And the master says, what'd you do with your coin? And the guy said, I was afraid that I might lose it or something might happen to it, so I buried it in the ground. Here it is. And the master said, you idiot. In the Aramaic, okay? And then what he did was he took the coin that guy buried in the ground and he gave it to the guy who made 10. And I said, well, that's not fair. And of course, in worldly standards, it doesn't seem to be. All the guy was doing was giving into his fear. Why is that fair? But I think what Jesus was saying was, you know, in order to be able to allow the gifts to grow inside you and to be ready for more, you have to use what you got. Use what you got and more will be given to you. It's not risky business about, you know, banking investments, all right? Use what you got and more will be given to you. But if you don't use what you got, how can I possibly give you? I can't give you any more. You might want it, but there is absolutely no room inside of you for more gifts unless you use the ones you've already got. That's just the way it works. Use the ones you've got and more will be given to you. I can't give you any more unless you use the ones you already have. Your gifts already are known to you as gifts. I am a talented singer or teacher or construction worker. Excuse me, it doesn't matter. I am a talented giver, father, whatever you want to say. You can define what those are for yourselves, but they may be limited and radically limited once you understand what you are capable of in frequency. Most of you have settled because most of you have operated with a very, very narrow set of parameters of what you thought you could be. Remember one of the Rocky movies, his manager is talking to him. I think it was in the third one. He said to him, you know, the worst thing that could happen to a fighter is what happened to you, right? You lost your hunger, you lost your edge, you became complacent. Right. And here's what it's saying here, I believe, is that, I know this is rather paradoxical, it doesn't seem peaceful, right? But in order to be able to receive what it is that you're looking for in terms of grace or the presence of God or whatever words you want to use to that, you're going to have to tap into the yearning in your soul. As Augustine said, you know, you have made our hearts restless and they will never rest until they rest in thee. And you got to tap into that. That's where your energy comes from. It's kind of, again, it's sort of being on that edge of desire and surrender. On desire for more and open to more on a spiritual level. And it creates a whole different set of dynamics than what we are used to. Most of you have settled because most of you have operated in a very, very narrow set of parameters. And your achievement, for lack of a better word, has been held within those parameters. If you look throughout history at those people who have accelerated the growth of this planet, right, not the billionaires, the ones who have accelerated the growth of this planet, they have always been singing an 8-octave range. Merton, Teresa. Teresa's famous quote, what is your job, Mother Teresa? To see Christ in all his distressing disguises. God, what a beautiful, beautiful statement. To see Christ in all his distressing disguises. What have I missed? They have always been moving far past the limitations of their time and reaching forward to call the future to them. It's not a linear thing of past, present, future. I call the future to me to manifest in truth what I know in truth. I am manifesting this next moment in truthfulness and peace. Doesn't mean I'm out of the present moment. I'm not. I know that sounds paradoxical, but I don't think it is. And that is how great art and great music and great science has been created throughout time. I think Beethoven woke up one morning and said, well, I think I'm going to write the Emperor Concerto today. Or Einstein said, well, I'm really going to nail it today. I got relativity down pat. Right? E equals M. I'm right there on the edge. What we call genius, and I believe Mozart, I think, even said this out loud, what we call genius is in a sense kind of plugging into the source. Realizing our oneness with all that is, with all of the archetypal pieces of art that have, or pieces of music that have ever been created, and letting that be, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace, right? Letting me be an instrument of that so it flows to me and through me, and if I happen to be a painter, it flows from me as artwork. If I happen to be a physicist, it flows through me as a marvelous equation. If I happen to be a musician, it flows through me as music. If you happen to be a grandparent, it flows through you as your love for your grandchild. Or any other form it's going to take. Could be cooking, could be knitting, could be crocheting, could be cutting people's hair, could be cutting people's lawns, could be taking out the garbage. I was putting up the chairs today. Lee was a little bit late today. I was putting up the chairs today, and Margot was helping me, and Shelley came in and started doing it. And all of a sudden, you know, I was just, well, here I am putting up the chairs for class. It's very serious business. And then I realized it was, and I'm so, I feel so blessed because of this. I realized, wait a minute, this is an act of love. I'm putting up the chairs as an act, and immediately, I can't, the personality in me can't take credit for that, but immediately the whole scene changed. I said, oh, this is an act of love. What a difference. Didn't have anything to do with chairs or me or anything else. It had to do with the vibration and the frequency I was working out of. Now, sometimes you're going to feel that, and sometimes you're not. It's not always going to be an emotional thing. And see, that's another thing we can become attached to. I can become attached to the emotional form that I think this action is supposed to take.
I just want to share something that I've kind of discovered, and it's based on my belief that happiness is a choice. And I think, like, when you get up in the morning, you can decide what kind of a day you want. And if you decide to be happy, because of that frequency, you will draw to you things that will make you happy during the day. And of course, the opposite is true. But it has to be more, it's not just a mental understanding. It's not just, well, I'm going to decide today that I'm going to be happy and good things are going to happen to me. You have to feel it in your heart. And if you can, you know, try it. Feel it. If you can feel it in your heart, things will show up in your day that will make you happy.
Thank you, Dixie. It's what I would call a commitment, right? And when we talk about feeling it in your heart, it's not about an emotion so much, not a kind of an emotional high, but we can know, no matter what our mood might happen to be, and I'll open up, you can tell me if I'm clicking with you here, but I can tell when my heart's open and when it's closed. Okay? I'm talking about my spiritual heart, right? When it's closed off in fear or anger or separateness, and when it's open. Now sometimes I have to work on those doors, okay? But I can, I have to be aware enough to know this. Right? Because sometimes I can go through a whole day and realize, oh, my heart was closed all day long. Right? I didn't even realize it.
How do we check that, Jerry?
I just want to add to that. If we're not consciously creating, aware that we're creating our, you know, our reality, then we're just creating by default, mm-hmm. and we're just going to get what comes to us.
And the Course says that, I think, almost those exact words, okay? Paul was asking, well, you know, I think awareness is a practice, just like the presence of God is a practice. I mean, really, essentially, they're both the same thing, right? But there's a, what I'm reminded of, as you asked that question, is a little book called The Practice of the Presence of God, written by Brother Lawrence, who is a medieval monk, who just kind of a series of letters he was writing to a student of his. But it's, you don't have to go out and read the book, okay? All you have to do is, you know, ask yourself the question periodically, is how can I see God in this? How can I ask for God's help in this? One of the things that I did for a while was I had a watch that had a little vibration on it. It would vibrate every hour. Actually, I call it my Course in Miracles watch, okay? Because, mm-hmm. you know, I got it because every hour you're supposed to remember something and say something and do this prayer. Of course, half the day would be gone. I'd forget whatever it was, right? Or if I would remember to do it, I couldn't remember what the lesson was at the time, okay? So, but we... This is what we are doing. One of the things we are doing here is we are encouraged to set up for ourselves being in that practice of awareness. Okay, and I think each one of us is going to have our own individual way of doing that. Commitment certainly is a big thing.
And
just being committed to that.
For me, a really good way to get into this is to practice gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
And if I say, thank you, God, once a day, I say it maybe 25 times a day, and my heart opens, and I can feel that. So it's just one way.
Yeah. I think it was both Meister Eckhart and Dag Hammarskjöld who said, if the only prayer I say is thank you, that will be enough. And so there are many, many different ways that we can have training ourselves or adapting ourselves to that kind of awareness we're talking about. Okay? What is important is for us to be able to find a way that works for us. I do believe that having a couple of times during a day that I deliberately take out for quiet or silence can be a very, very powerful piece to that. One time, let's say in the morning, one time in the evening, if you'd like to do it that way. And if nothing else, I'll remember to be in the presence of God those two times, okay? But even if I think about it, let's suppose the morning I might not think about a whole lot because I do it almost automatically every morning. The evening one sometimes gets by me sometimes, right? But if I start thinking, let's say in the afternoon, 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, when am I going to do my meditation time this evening? Just that question can be a reminder of, oh, can I be grateful at this particular, let me set a time for myself, but also let me be grateful for at this moment. So I think there are lots of ways of being able to do that, and really essentially that's what we're doing. We're training ourselves to do that. Are we going to be perfect? No. Are we going to forget sometimes? Probably. But as it said so beautifully in the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament, was that when you wake up, when you become aware again, that's not time to beat yourself up for falling asleep. That's the time to be grateful you became aware again. Oh, I could pray about this. I could ask for help. I could do this. I could choose this differently. We will tell you this, as we expand you in frequency, what you reach for will be higher. It may not look like what you thought you wanted. It may look very different. But you will be reaching at that level, and what you will be transforming is your own life for the benefit of you and for others. This is not selfish work. You are a well, you are in nourishment, and you are in nourishment of others. Now you are not filling a need in the way that we described earlier. Someone is in desperate need of love, so you love them. In fact, when you are resonating as love, you are doing that, but not from an ego level. You are supporting others in rising to that frequency. When you resonate as love, you are the gift of love to others. And as they resonate with you, they begin to heal and become who they are as well. There's an old, I'm going to end with this one. There's an old Sufi saying, the pickpocket looked at the saint, and all he saw were pockets. That just knocks me out. The pickpocket saw the saint, and all he saw were pockets. Thank you all. Thank you all for raising the frequency of this planet, of this universe. Know that the work you are doing is so much bigger than the little personality self that we think we are attached to. So thank you all. We'll see you next week. Okay?
Peace. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Yes. Grateful, grateful, grateful.
She texted me and said,